Hi, everybody, and welcome to the club, this live session. I think we're session number 36, I think. Let's jump over to Trello and find out for sure where we're at, get myself organised here. Got a few things planned for today. Here we go. Oh, beg your pardon. Oh, yeah, 33. What am I doing? 36. Live session number 33. What we're covering today is we're going to do our daily focus. I'm going to drag that down to the bottom. There was a request by one of our fantastic members to talk about dentist and team performance feedback. How to identify areas of improvement, deliver the feedback, and remain a happy team. So the actual message was review of staff. Should we be reviewing the dentists? And if so, how would we go about this? So that's our first thing that we're going to be concentrating on today. The second thing was also another member request, and that was discounting your dentistry. When we're talking about some of these things such as smile.com and, you know, Medibank Private and Bupa, reduce fees for service, and they certainly can help out with large numbers of people coming into the practice, but we're going to talk about the impact that that actually has on the dentists themselves and the practice as a whole. Go through a couple of other things. Let me drag these things to the top because we'll do these bits and pieces first. So here we go. All foundation members. Now, as you know, as of the 1st of October, the club is going to be a two-tiered paid system. Any practice, though, that cannot afford it during these times because of restrictions and closures, or they've chosen to close, there is a discount code for you. You can maintain your membership for free. And let me just share screen. I'll see if I can quickly get the my little page up here. So as you know, it's been a free service since April. I've really enjoyed it. We've got 60 practices involved now. So it's a large number of practices, and hopefully everyone's getting enormous value from it. And if you scroll down on the club itself, if you scroll down to the bottom here, I can quickly move through with you the two levels of membership that I've created for club members. The first is called the Club Basic, $49 a month, very affordable. Weekly live sessions like we do now, the full access to the library of previous live session recordings in the Club Hub, and inclusion to the Club Private Facebook group. The higher tier of membership is the Club membership, and that's $497. You also get the weekly live sessions, access to previous recordings, the Facebook group as well, but on top of that, you get the enrollment of to the JPPS online mini courses and any additional courses that get added to that. You also get the chance to utilize my time and Charles's time. So 1 hour every month with me to work on practice self and team and systems, and 1 hour every month with Charles, a real self-awareness journey that you can go down, and he will also help you strategize and give you marketing ideas for your practice as well. And that's $497 a month. If you are in a position where you simply can't afford it, I really do want you to maintain your membership, because I believe the value that you can get, the ideas you can get from being involved in the club, can give you the things that you need to implement to increase your levels of success. So just realize I have my washing machine on. I hope no one can hear it. Maybe in the spin cycle later on, we'll all hear it. I should have popped it on pause. So these are the two levels of membership. When you apply, and I'm going to be sending you out an email about this, so you don't need to do it just yet. I'm just going to make sure all my back-end stuff is all rigid before I do that. You just select which level of cover that you would like, and then if you need to continue it as a free service, you'll see here the discount code for paid membership of the Club Basic is ASSIST. So the discount code applies to the Club Basic membership, and it is the word ASSIST in capitals, A-S-S-I-S-T. And with all of the foundation members, because you've been here from the start and you've had access to the online courses, that won't change. Whether you do the Club Basic, the full club membership or have a discounted zero fee membership, you will maintain your JPPS online course enrollment. That won't be taken away from you. Hopefully that's all good news, and it will become clearer as I communicate with you via email. So expect an email over the coming week that will I'll be reminding you in the build-up to the 1st of October. So hopefully no one has to have a gap in their membership. The other thing I wanted to mention, which I forgot to add here, so I'll quickly add it here as an item. And members of the Australian Dental Association Victoria branch will have received an email in the mail, in the email. And those who haven't got membership with the ADA VB, I'm here to tell you right now, it's good news. So we can now function and operate at level 2 as of the 26th of September, a mere few days away, terribly exciting. And then as of the 26th of October, we'll be able to function at level 1. So that is truly fabulous. This is exactly what we need for the dental industry to remain viable, to remain in a position where we can properly care for our patients and not neglect them in terms of their oral health. And so hopefully everyone's on board. If you need any assistance in terms of reopening and making sure you've got all your systems in play in order to reopen, do go back to the Club Hub. One of the top boxes there that you can click into is COVID-19 operations. And I've just cherry picked out all the key information that I've done through various live sessions over the last few months, and all the information's in there. You'll be able to get your COVID safe plan up and running in there. It's got all the little bits and pieces of information that you need. If you have any questions though, or you need any guidance at all, contact me anytime on my phone number, on my email, or if you're involved in the Trello board, on the Trello board. If you're involved in the club Facebook group, then in the club Facebook group. So there's that announcement. How exciting is that? And just for the last few days of functioning in emergency only operations in, or not Victoria, but in Melbourne, I just wanted to mention, I have had a couple of contacts from members saying that they have heard rumours about people calling their practice and testing them to make sure they're only seeing emergency patients, and saying things such as, I really need a crown. I know you're not allowed to do it, but I'll pay you more if you do it for me. There was one practice it may have been a practice or even another business, but they had one of these funny calls. And then at the time that person was supposed to arrive, it was two plainclothes police officers. I have absolutely no proof if that's absolutely true or not. It's purely rumour. It's something that everyone should be aware of, making sure that all your team are very clear on the standard or the level of patients' emergency that they can allow into the practice. It's tricky when it was the ADA VB themselves that said it's actually deemed by the dentist what is considered an emergency. And you would think that in order to deem that, you need to see that. So just be aware of that. Okay, let's get into our very first presentation today. And I've got, I'm starting to use a few PowerPoints. It just takes a bit of a break from just looking at my face the whole time. So a little bit of variety. And that is providing feedback to dentists effectively. So in answer to your question, Elle, yes, I do agree that dentists need to be included in the, not performance review, but just the delivery of feedback around their performance and how they manage patients and how they manage team members as well and themselves within that team. I think it's crucial, as you know, with the kind of team culture that I like to promote in practices, I think it's crucial that we are all on this self-awareness journey, on this self-improvement journey. Otherwise, we get quite stuck and rigid in our ways. And if people don't relate to us or agree with the way that we're managing patients, etc., it does cause concern, resentment, questions, queries, and all of that then plays out in what the patient's perception of us and our practice is. And so let's go through what I would consider and what I used to practice within my practice at Dendy Village Dental when I owned that for 10 years, how I used to create the environment for delivery of feedback. First of all, let's admit it. feedback is difficult to deliver and it is difficult to receive. And the first couple of thoughts that came into my mind when I'm thinking around why it's difficult to deliver feedback is that there is one, a fear of possible confrontation or an emotional response from the other person. When we feel criticized, we can all of a sudden become silent, we can cry, we can get cross, we can start to justify everything and feel hard done by. And so sometimes the response of the receiver of the feedback is such an unknown thing that can add to the fear and trepidation of the person delivering the feedback. The other thing that came to my mind was that there's always a strong empathy to the receiver's position as well. I'm going to see if I can get a little pointer here that can help when I'm moving around the screen. Hopefully I won't jump around too quickly. There we go. Empathy to receiver's position. So sometimes if we're a very strongly empathetic person, we can go, oh my gosh, I feel so bad for this person that I have to give them this negative feedback and they must feel terrible and I would feel terrible. And so all of that baggage you bring to the delivery of the feedback, and that can be a bit of a fear too, that you're like, oh, poor thing. And so that's the way you're delivering it. So you're not so much delivering it in a powerful way at all. You don't feel emboldened by it. You just have these strong feelings of empathy for the other person. And let's have a look at why the feedback is difficult to receive. And the first couple of things that came to my mind is number one, and psychologists have said that one of our biggest anxieties when it comes to a workplace is that something will happen, some person will show up that will show us to be incompetent. And so being perceived as incompetent is a fear that we have. And so as a receiver, if someone's giving us negative feedback, it's an indication that we're possibly incompetent in some way. It's a very uncomfortable feeling normally. Also, there's a sense of rejection. This is a very strong fear of many people moving through life. I won't say that to my loving partner, they might reject me. I won't say that to my friend, they might reject me. I won't be honest with my mother about how I feel about something or other, she might reject me. And so the fear of rejection is a kind of a long-standing fear that we have had for, you know, since day dot nearly. And it stays with us until we can readdress what that should mean to us in a more self-aware older space. But when it comes to receiving feedback, that can be a trigger for fear. So first thing I'd like to do, and I encourage you to do it as well, is to let's address the belief that we have around feedback. Under normal circumstances, no, not these progressive, magnificent team culture practices that are part of the club, but under normal circumstances, feedback is negative and unhelpful. So quite often, feedback is, I want you to stop doing things that way because it's not making the patients feel the way I want them to feel. So for example, you could say to a receptionist, I don't want you to be quoting fees over the phone to patients because I fear that they won't book in because it all comes down to money for them and they won't book in because the price is too high. And so then the receptionist left there thinking, okay, I won't do that. But the next time she gets a phone call asking for the fee, what comes out of her mouth is, I'm sorry, we don't quote fees over the phone here. And the patient hangs up and calls the next practice on the list. And the receptionist ends up feeling quite inadequate. And then the next feedback she is likely to get from the boss is, I don't like it when you say to patients, your callers to the practice, we don't quote fees over the phone because it sounds like that makes people just hang up. So I want you to not quote fees over the phone, but I also want you to keep them on the phone and eventually book in for an appointment time. That kind of feedback is negative and it is wildly unhelpful. We'll talk about how to make it not negative, so therefore positive, and we'll talk about how to make it helpful as we go through. So as a just to kind of finalise that thought, the better way to go about it would be, we don't want to quote fees over the phone to patients, something that I actually don't truly think is right, but anyway, it's my own view. We'll talk about that another time. We don't want to quote our fees over the phone to patients. So what I'd like to do instead is this. How do you feel about saying this to patients over the phone? Do you think it will be effective? Okay, you've got some modifications. Let's modify what we say. Try saying that a few times. We'll catch up again in another few days and you can let me know how patients have received that information. So that's not negative. We're progressing somewhere and it is helpful. You're going to give training, tools, support, and the ability for feedback afterwards and follow up to be able to make sure that that feedback is properly utilized. And so there is a big difference. So when you are delivering feedback in that kind of old traditional way, that and you would perceive that as negative and unhelpful. However, the way you're going to be delivering feedback in your practice is going to be wildly different now. I'm just going to double check that I am recording. I always get a freak out. Oh my God, I hope I'm recording. We're going to flip the belief to feedback is a crucial step to improvement and is therefore enormously helpful. Embracing feedback allows me to grow. So let's move through creating the environment that I'm talking about where people can start to shift their belief around feedback from it is negative and unhelpful to it's crucial to my improvement and I embrace it because I want to grow. So the value of Can I as your culture, long-time listeners, long-time viewers of the club will know that I've gone through this in the past and I love to revisit things because repetition plays a big role in understanding and then being able to implement these sort of things within your practice. So that's quite loud. I'll just close my little door a little bit. Hopefully that will help. So the kind of team culture that I like to encourage practices to implement is one that has as its basis, can I, constant and never-ending improvement. Now, constant never-ending improvement requires us to embrace four concepts. And as we move through these four concepts, you might start getting a little bit more excited about receiving feedback for improvement. So let's move through. Number one, improvement is achieved through making mistakes. And I'll be detailing these more so in coming slides. So in order for us to improve, we need to acknowledge that making mistakes is part of the journey. Indeed, Charles Coves, co-founder of JPPS and also guest presenter on the club, he states very clearly and boldly, he challenges people to think of anything that they've learned without making mistakes. And he says there's just no skill that you can learn without making mistakes. It is part of learning. The second element that we need to embrace is the improvement is achieved through practice and repetition. All too often, I will ask dental practice owners, how much time do you give people to practice a new thing, a new system, a new script, a new thing before you start giving up hope on them or getting frustrated by their lack of progress? And they say one or two times. Phooey, no way. We are constantly in the process of practice and repetition to improve what we do. And it is through practice and repetition that we improve. We don't magically get things in just a couple of goes. And depending on the skill that we're trying to learn, it may take an enormous amount of practice and repetition as well. So we'll talk more on that in a moment too. The third concept to embrace with Can I as the team culture is improvement is achieved outside our comfort zone into the learning zone. Getting comfortable with feelings of incompetence. And as I said in the previous slide, one of the fears we have when we receive feedback is that we fear being perceived as incompetent. We need to shift what that means to us, the meaning we attach to that, because it is in that learning zone, that zone that we are a little incompetent, but progressing towards competency, that's where big learning happens. And opportunities for improvement are identified through embracing feedback. So just saying, as a human being, I know I'm not perfect. I would like to become more and more perfect all the time, closer and closer to perfection all the time. However, me stating that I'm not perfect means that there is room for improvement. There are elements in my performance that can be improved. And unless I'm stupid and have identified them all, but just resist all the change and keep doing the wrongly over and over again and in an incompetent way over and over again, it means I'm not aware of the areas of improvement that are available to me. And that's where feedback comes in. So we'll talk more about that too. That's what we're talking about, the feedback. And so it helps you shift it from feedback is negative and unhelpful to how can I possibly improve with that feedback? And I've got such a desire to improve, to be on this constant and never-ending improvement journey. I need to seek out the feedback. I need to ask for it. And when it's delivered to me, I need to welcome it and thank that person for the gift that they've given me, because this is what it means to be on a consistent and never-ending journey of improvement. So let's have a quick look at mistakes. Some of you would have seen this mistakes policy that I encourage you all to adopt immediately and adopt it straight away. I don't expect you to practice it straight away, because it is through practice and repetition that this will start to really take hold as a belief within your organization. So because of the fact that there is no skill that we've ever learned without making mistakes, because of the fact when you say things to people, such as when you were watching a little baby learn to walk, did you all of a sudden give up hope because it couldn't walk in the first 5 tries? When you were first learning to drive, did you do the wrong thing twice and go, that's it, I'm useless at driving, I simply cannot drive, it's not for me, I'll just have to get taxis everywhere? And when you started learning the software system for the first time in your dental practice, did you give yourself just 2 days to learn it all and then give up hope once you couldn't remember every little thing to do? No, of course not. You knew in those big things that I'm on a journey of education and improvement, of mastering this thing that I need to use. And so our performance is the same thing. When we say to a receptionist, this is the script I'd like you to use. When we say to a dental nurse, this is the way I'd like patients to be brought into the surgery. When we say to a dentist, this is the way we'd like you to educate patients in the surgery about their treatment. And all the many systems that we've got in our practices at the moment and the future practice systems that we're going to adopt in coming years, if we didn't allow for mistakes, we are making that journey for your team torturous. And this is where you can create an environment where I've told you what to do. Why aren't you doing it? You must be bad or incompetent. And so therefore, people don't attempt to change. Or when you're talking about what great systems we can implement, they're not creative in that space. Because the minute I step outside of my norm, I get a finger of scrutiny pointed at me and it feels terribly uncomfortable. I feel rejected outside of the group. And one of the other byproducts of that kind of culture is that if somebody else is seen to be doing something wrong, you're very quick to point the finger, because you're like, as long, thank God, it's not pointing at me. If I'm pointing it to somebody else, then it's not coming back on me. And you don't want a team full of people who are so shy and so discouraged about trying something new and improving performance, in order to have your whole team feel really comfortable in that constant and never-ending improvement journey. Shift your belief around mistakes. I implore you to do this. And so start looking at this. Mistakes are a sign of having tried. We will forgive honest mistakes that are made in the pursuit of legitimate practice goals. We learn by mistakes and they become part of our collective knowledge. Mistakes born of negative attitude are not to be repeated. So it doesn't mean you get someone with a bad attitude and you just have to accept what they do. No, that's different. That's separate. But generally, I haven't seen that many staff members turn up to work every day hell-bent on making sure that no one succeeds and they perform abysmally. It's a rarity. So let's go with the majority who do want to turn up and do a great job. They want to be proud of what they do. They want to move collectively to a great goal and a worthy goal of the whole practice. And you want to continually improve as a practice. You want to get better at rolling out your current systems. You want to start implementing better systems. You want to start being able to more effectively communicate and rapport build with your patients. You want the team to better support each other. You want the leaders to become better at what they do as well in leading the whole group. If we say, I get it, of course we want to continually improve, then you must also say, of course, that comes through making mistakes. And so I encourage you to shift your belief around mistakes. And when I was saying before, it's going to take practice, it does, because your default place is to get frustrated with mistakes. And so just promise yourself, okay, the next time someone makes a mistake, I want to pull myself up and go, oh, that's right, mistakes are a sign of having tried. Maybe they need more training. Maybe they need more support. Maybe they need more repetition to get it right. So I love that mistake, because keep in mind too, with every mistake, that's how you modify how you do things so it's better next time. That's the modification process. You don't want to throw that out. That's how we improve. And so do shift your thoughts around mistakes as a team. And if you don't approach a mistake in this new mindset every time, that's okay. It just requires practice. Tweaking, practice, tweaking, practice, that whole repetition. So talking about practice and repetition, repetition is a crucial part of learning. In memory, the more times patterns of thought are repeated, the more likely you will be able to recall information. And Paulo Coelho, routine has nothing to do with repetition. To become really good at anything, you have to practice and repeat. Practice and repeat until the technique becomes intuitive. We've all seen great performers in the past. The ones that kind of come to my mind quickly are the odd receptionists that I've worked in the past who are just tremendous at what they did. Great rapport builders. Everything came out so fluently from their mouth. And as a young receptionist, I'd be like, oh, wow, gosh, they're so good at what they do. I wish I was that good at what they do. And they got good at what they do through constant practice and repetition. And it gets to the point where they don't even see themselves evolving anymore because they have achieved a certain level of mastery. But to maintain that mastery, practice and repetition, practice and repetition. There was a story, it reminds me, I was on a walk with somebody, with a walking group, and somebody had said to me that they traveled in Spain for 6 months. Was it 6 months? No, they lived there for 2 years, sorry. It's coming back to me. They lived there for 2 years. She went there not speaking Spanish. By the time she came back, she was fluent in Spanish, fluent enough. Comes back, lives here for 6 months, doesn't speak a word of Spanish. She said she'd forgotten almost all of it. Isn't that extraordinary? So it makes you realize, gosh, you know, when we are under the age of seven, what we learn tends to stick right in there. But after that, we definitely need this practice and repetition to both master a skill, but then maintain that skill as well. Aristotle, it is frequent repetition that produces a natural tendency, that natural tendency to bring to build great rapport with somebody, that natural tendency just to be able to intuitively know how to use the dental software system. Learning zone, that's the next one. So the learning zone, this is your comfort zone, and the comfort zone is, they say, these are words taken from somewhere else, lifeless, secure, unchallenged, bored, stable, safe, and easy. And certainly comfort just says it all to me. Comfort zone is comfortable. The learning zone is excited, exhilarated, challenged, willing to risk, and expectant. Whereas the panic zone on the outside, that's fearful, tense, exhausted, stressed. So you don't want to push people beyond into the panic zone, into the fear of learning and fear of getting it wrong. You want to encourage them to certainly push outside the comfort zone enough so they're learning something new into the learning zone. And quite often, if we've got a new member of staff coming on board, and they're going to need to learn how we do reception or how we do nursing or how we do our dentistry within our practice, quite often we can give them, you know, the equivalent of the whole practice manual and say, go learn that. And you're like, wow, that's panic zone stuff. Give them enough that they're in the learning zone, but they're not overwhelmed in that learning zone. Hopefully, staff members that get employed by you will be there for a long, long time. You've got plenty of opportunity to eventually cover all the systems you need them to cover. Now, the other thing that ties in with the learning zone is in order to be functioning in the learning zone, it means naturally it comes with feelings of incompetence. Now, have a look at this. This is the competency grid. And let me move through each of these areas, these four areas. I'm going to liken it to driving a car, learning to drive a car. So first of all, we are in unconscious incompetence. So you are aware of the skill, you are unaware of the skill and your lack of proficiency in it. So this could be, you know, when you're 10 years old, you know that there's the skill of driving that you're going to learn one day, but you are unconscious of any competency or lack of competency that you would have in that skill. You are just completely unaware. And so, you know, unawareness is fantastic. You're not worried about a damn thing because you're unaware about it. And then we move into conscious incompetence. And conscious incompetence is when you're 17 years old, you got your learner's permit, you're sitting in the driver's seat for the first time, and you are aware of the skill, but you're not yet proficient. So you become very conscious of what you're incompetent about. So all of a sudden you put your foot on the accelerator and you take off. You're like, oh gosh, I did that wrong. You put your foot on the brake and you go hard. You steer too hard to the right or to the left, and you become very aware, very conscious that you don't know how to do this skill. You got stuff to learn. And then we move into conscious competence. Okay, we're driving around that big car park. For me, it was at the local footy ground, huge car park. You're driving around the car park. You're conscious of all the skills that are required in terms of depressing the pedals for acceleration and braking, moving the steering wheel, indicating and looking around at the same time. You are now competent enough with these skills, but you're thinking very carefully about every step you take. You certainly couldn't conduct a thoughtful conversation with somebody sitting in the car with you while you are trying to learn to drive. So you're allowed out on the roads, you're competent enough to be out there, but you can't be distracted. You need to consciously think through each of your movements. And then after practice and repetition, we move into unconscious competence, where you drive from point A to point B, you're listening to podcasts, you've had a conversation with somebody in the back seat, you've avoided an accident, you're doing going from point A to point B, and you can't even remember how you drove there. You couldn't recall how many traffic lights you went through going there, because you're so competent that now it's been chunked into subconscious mind and you just do it intuitively, naturally. So in order to be on this path of constant and never-ending improvement, we need to be in the learning zone. To be in the learning zone, we need to get comfortable with this, the conscious incompetence. We hate this feeling. Before the conscious incompetence, when we're unconsciously incompetent, we're unaware, it doesn't bother us. It doesn't bother us when we're unconsciously competent, for sure, because we're proficient at that skill now. It doesn't even bother us when we're in conscious competence. It's exhausting being in this space for too many tasks. But if you're given a not overwhelming amount of stuff to be learning and you're in conscious competence, that's good too, because you know where you're at. Okay, I'm getting the feel of it all now. I think I know what I'm doing. But this yellow area, the conscious incompetence, this awareness of I don't know what the hell I'm doing and I don't know how I'm going to learn how to do it, uncomfortable. But this is where the learning zone functions. So we need to shift our belief around conscious incompetence from I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, I hate it, to I love it because I get to learn a new skill. Because the guarantee is that if you give yourself practice and repetition, the support mechanisms behind learning something new, that conscious incompetence area is temporary. It's temporary. It doesn't go on forever. So I embrace my conscious incompetence about things because it is temporary and necessary for me to move into competence, and I've learned yet another skill. How grand is life? Now, the rest of this bit is going to be the fourth element of constant, never-ending improvement, which is the feedback. And I want to talk about how to create an environment for delivering feedback. But first of all, because the question was a little bit was more around dentists, I wanted just to go through the areas of performance that could be worthy of providing feedback to a dentist. checking in on my time. Beautiful. First of all, the clinical aspects of a dentist's performance, so that therefore the provision of the services and their productivity, how quickly they can get certain services done or how many they can get done in a day, or the range of services they can deliver to patients. All that clinical stuff, I don't think there is a place for anyone to deliver that information, that feedback to them, unless they are either more experienced or more experienced and educated or more educated than that dentist in that space. Usually it comes from in a mentorship process, but I don't believe that, and I've never believed that a dental receptionist, practice manager, clinical coordinator, dental assistant, hygienist, none of them are as educated in their field as that dentist. And so therefore, it is very difficult for a dentist, and I would understand if a dentist was resistant to feedback from that person. There are ways of delivering feedback. You can say, oh, interesting, I read this article the other day, you might be interested in it. It's about, I don't know, etching and bonding techniques or debridement techniques. You might want to be, you might find that interesting. That's fine. That's being a supportive team member. But I've been quite firm, and I know that when I owned my practice, you know, there was definitely that line. If it was clinical, it wasn't my area. I was not trained adequately. I did not have adequate education to be able to broach somebody in that. So I do think anything clinical is up to the dentists to discuss as a group and maybe have some sort of mentorship going on. And any younger dentist that is employed within your practice, I do encourage you to take them under your wing and do a bit of mentorship. I know that sometimes there are short stays as dentists and they move from your one practice to another to another. However, getting into the habit of and bringing about the awareness that team training, including dentists, team training is a constant. It never actually stops. That is key to having a constant, never-ending improvement journey going on for everyone, because you're not just training new team members up or existing team members into a new role. If you incorporate constant improvement within your team, then we're always, all of us, on this training journey, getting better and better and better all the time. And that constant never-ending improvement is a lovely frame as well, because it brings everyone to the same level. No one is perfect. Everyone has the ability to improve. So we're all, I hate this term, we're all in this together. I'm not going to use it. So we're all singing from the same hymn sheet, that we're all wanting to improve together so everyone can provide feedback to each other. But clinical is a little bit separate, I believe. Systems, so they can become, we can start provide, these other areas are areas that we can all provide feedback around. So their efficiency of the use of the appointment book and the appointment time. The classic one is just running late. So we can always provide feedback and helpful hints on how to not run late. Patient follow-up, you know, how quickly a dentist is going to want that patient followed up in terms of their treatment plan or after an extraction, having a call the next day or what have you. Also, rapport building skills with patients. That's a lovely area to build feedback, you know, to deliver feedback around, because and patient education and engagement in their treatment plan, in their oral condition, what their options are to relieve them of that oral condition and the ramifications of all these different options that they have, and communication with team members. These are all soft skills stuff, these three. Soft skills being just the way we interact with one another. That can always improve. Again, there's no one perfect at that. We can always be improving in that space. And remember, if you feel like you're a master in that space, the practice and repetition is still needed in order to maintain that mastery. So always think, I know I'm there, I'm really good, but goodness me, I want to make sure I maintain this level of mastery in this. And so I'm in this journey with everybody else of consistent and constant never-ending improvement. When you do deliver feedback, it is recommended to use the PIP technique. And every time I research this, which is probably, you know, once every year or two, I do go back and research this just to make sure there's no magnificent new systems out there that I'm missing out on. And again, I do see people saying this is really a very encouraging way to provide feedback. And we're talking about it being both not negative, positive feedback and helpful as well. So the PIP stands for positive, a point for point of praise, improvement, praise. Praise, improvement, praise. And so describe a positive. You're so polite with patients and help them feel really comfortable. But then you have a suggestion for improvement. And keep in mind, your delivery is going to be key with this on how well it gets received. How well it gets received depends on that person's belief around what feedback means to them, which it can be a negative one at the start of their journey, but we're hoping to provide feedback enough and have them evolve in that journey and become something wonderful that they embrace. So delivery is important. So often the point for improvement is simply your opinion. So do be aware of that. There are some instances where you're giving feedback around, oh, you can't use that cycle on the autoclave because the autoclave, the instruments aren't being sterilized effectively. That's just a clear direction. But when we're talking about feedback, it's like you're doing this thing. And I'm thinking that you'll get better results if you do this thing, if you tweak it in this particular way. So quite often it is simply your opinion. So deliver it that way. I wonder whether you could get more patients committing to treatment if they had more time with you to explain their treatment options. That's not telling them, can you spend more time with your patients educating them because they're coming out confused. They're saying, I wonder whether you would get better patient compliance if you took more time to explain the treatment options to them. And so you're framing it in such a way and delivering it in such a way that it could be, you're creating a better environment for it to be received well. And when you say, I wonder whether, hopefully you're triggering that person going, oh, I wonder whether I could. I wonder whether that has validity to it. Because remember, none of us like being told what to do. So the minute we're given, I know you do it this way, but you must do it this way from now on, there is a childlike resistance to that. Don't tell me what to do. So much better if you just pose the question, oh, I wonder what else could help in making sure that patients were more accepting of their treatment plans. I wonder what else could help. And then you reinforce the positive. You really do. You have a great manner with patients and you are such a good communicator. It's great to watch you in action. And so just delivering a negative feedback, a so-called negative feedback, is like a bullet to the gut. But if you helping that patient, that person in front of you to feel accepted and wanted and validated and understood and valued, then they are more likely to receive your feedback in a positive manner. So using the PIP technique is great. And again, when you are delivering feedback, use this technique and practice and repeat. Practice and repeat from the response you get from your team members. That's where you'll tweak how you do it. And the way you do the PIP technique today is going to be wildly different after a 6-month period of giving feedback on a regular basis, because you will have learned and tweaked your method and you'll be then on the road to mastery of it. No longer feeling trepidation around delivering feedback. So creating the right environment, how are we going to create the right environment? And this is where I'm not a huge fan of performance reviews. I think ongoing team training is far better. Performance reviews have that air about them where it's the boss just telling the employees what they're doing wrong and how to improve. And it can be something that both sides are quite anxious about. The times where I think performance review is a great thing is when it's approached in a way of, and everyone knows about my concept of, what can I do for you? So the boss is sitting there, the employee comes in, and the very thing, first thing that the boss says is, what can I do for you? What can I do to help you move through our systems more effectively, to be more productive, to be more happy, to be more efficient? What can I do for you? What do you need? What do you need from me? How can I provide better training and better support for you? And then ideally, then the employee says, and what can I do for you? Are there any points of feedback that you would like to deliver to me to help me improve in my space? That's where I think a performance review is effective. But when you use the term performance review, it conjures up an image of a process. And I think just that is a negative, it has negative connotations to it. So ongoing team training is so much better because we're meeting on a regular basis. We're constantly coaching each other all the way through to improvement. And we've got this mindset of constant, never-ending improvement. And so we're open to the feedback and it becomes a group push towards improvement. So clinical and production should be delivered by another more experienced and or educated clinician. So we've covered that. But all the other feedback, I think, can be done effectively in ideally brainstorming sessions is a big one. And if you want more information around brainstorming sessions, then there's one of the Trello links are there, but I'll make sure that I attach to this card and to this lesson the role play guide and how to run through a brainstorming session. But even with your monthly staff meetings, you can spend 10 minutes just going, okay, can someone highlight one thing that I've noticed that we could all improve in? Not one person improving, not Nicole, I want you to improve in this way. No, what's something that we could all utilize to improve as a general group? And someone may bring something up. Even your morning huddles, even though they're short, they need to be really snappy with time, that can also be, okay, can I give one point of feedback? Yesterday we were running a little bit crazy because we didn't have the lab work in. So I just wondered if anyone's got any ideas on how to make sure that the lab work's checked every day. And you're saying it in a very positive way that we're all going to adopt it, we're all involved in the solution. What can we do? So all of the feedback, if they're done when the team are gathering for whatever reason, even when, imagine if, you know, a couple of patients cancel, use that time. Go, okay, quickly get your steri done. Let's jump into and get half an hour worth of team training happening. Wonderful. You can have a growing list within your Google Calendar or your miscellaneous column in your dental software. But somewhere just have this growing list of areas that you'd love to be able to work on next time you've got a gap. You get strong collaboration of ideas when it's team training and not just all about one person. You then also have the ability to role play it out. Role playing is crucial when it comes to identifying barriers to getting a new system underway or a script underway. It's also crucial in terms of giving people the confidence to roll this new thing out when they are next called upon to do it because they've got a memory of doing it, having done it. So role play is great. Reduce sense of scrutiny when it's a team environment. Everyone's involved in the solution. If you're involved in the solution, you feel more responsible to roll that new system out rather than just being told what to do. Remember, we don't like it. Where possible, make the points for improvement general. So that's what I was saying before. Like you may have noticed one staff member did this thing. Don't make it, okay, this staff member did this thing, I think we can improve her. Go, okay, one thing I did notice over the last couple of weeks was this thing. I think if we did it this way, we would be able to get a bit more, we'd be able to increase our level of customer service. What does everyone else think? Does anybody else have good ideas with that? Allow for reasons and excuses. If somebody says, actually, that I think you're talking about what I did yesterday, and just, you know, with that particular patient, this and this and this happened. Let people give their reasons. And I've written here excuses because sometimes they're taken as excuses, but I think it's important for people to get that out of their mouth. Say, I wasn't wildly incompetent. It was a particular situation. And so allow for the reasons and excuses. Show people that they are understood. It's one of our core needs as human beings to feel understood. And you hear it, you go, great. Oh, thanks for clarifying that. I understand why you did that now. But I think it's a great opportunity for all of us to actually identify this new way of doing something. So that I'm really thrilled that that happened. And of course, having it as a team thing rather than one-on-one, it fosters the culture of can I, constant and never-ending improvement. I will be running a little bit over today. I do apologize. So I'm probably going through to about 15 past the hour. So if you have to skedaddle, it'll be all in the recording. So whenever creating the right environment for doing this team improvement, where whenever you do provide feedback, also provide support and follow-up. This is what I was mentioning earlier on. So don't just say, this is the feedback and you're on your own. Provide whatever is required for that person to actually use that feedback to improve. So absolute clarity of expectations. So be very clear with what you expect to see with that. So if you just say to the receptionist, I don't want you to quote over the phone anymore for treatments, tell them exactly what you expect them to do instead. Be clear about the expectation. Detail the goal, because the goal is the goal to get the patient in for a free consultation to get a quote, or is the goal to be as helpful as possible to the patient? What's the clear goal? Discuss and show your personal method. Sorry about this typo, I will fix that. Discuss and show your personal method. So it's very easy to say, just do it better. But when you challenge someone, say, well, how would you do it? They're like, I don't know, but I just want you to do it better. So extrapolate your thought out and go, okay, well, let's have a think. How should it be done? How do I think it should be done? How would it roll out in such a way that I'd be really happy with that? Allow for autonomy. Do resist just telling people what to do. Autonomy is another core need that we have. One of our three main drivers as human beings is our need for autonomy. And by the way, another need is mastery, which is what constant, never any improvement is all about. So it tweaks that as well. But allow for their autonomy. Say, this is what I suggest, but you know, have a think about it. Tweak it to the way that it suits you or that you're comfortable with. Or what feedback do you have for me? What input do you have about how we could solve this issue? And then definitely provide follow-up. Say, okay, I'll catch up with you in about a week, see how things are going. Catch up with them in a week. Diarize that you're catching up in a week. And say, how are you going with that? Have you had any conversations around that have required you to give a quote over the phone? Mm-hmm. And did you use the new system? And you didn't? And is it because it's like it's in the moment, so we need to actually write this script down for you? So follow up, identify barriers for rolling this new system out. Do you need a bit more practice? Do you want to role play it with me for a little bit so you get it's more part of your subconscious action, more intuitive? So certainly utilizing this is making sure that you're creating the right environment for them to use the feedback effectively. And it shifts the feedback from negative and unhelpful to positive and helpful. Much better. Much better. Okay, that's the end of that one. Stop share. And we are now, actually I can go back into sharing again. So I hope you're all still with me. If you've got any questions, let me know. There we go. Try and get the right thing clicked. Keep in mind that all of the slides that I'm going through, they'll be posted to this lesson as well, this live session, so you won't lose the information. Discounting your dentistry. Why, it's a flawed plan. I've been criticised in the past for calling it out as a flawed plan, but I still believe in what I say. So let me show you what I think about it. Let me show you what my thoughts are around it. Go back to the top here. I'll go back to this second presentation. 7 minutes to do it in, yep, no way. It will be going through to 4:15. So discounting your services, the impact. Now I know and I appreciate the temptation to move down the path of either discounting a checkup and a clean or a whitening service to get new patients in the front door, to sign up with smile.com, Bupa, Medibank Private to get a bunch of new patients through the front door. I understand it. There is absolutely the belief that more new patients is good. Just we need constantly new patients. We need some new patients for sure, because unfortunately people pass away, they move house, they have changed financial situations, a host of reasons why your regular patients, your loyal patients may just stop attending. So we always need new patients. That's not what I'm saying. It's not that. But do we need all the new patients out there? I don't think so. And let me show you the reasons why. First of all, where there is an impact of discounting, and there's the impact on the dentist themselves, on the practice, on the patient base. Getting my little spotlight here again. And on your business viability. Let's move through each of those four areas. First of all, now these figures were done 2014, but I've rechecked them and it all looks good. It's all good. So first of all, we're going to be looking at the financial, purely financial impact on the employee dentist. when you start to discount. So let's say the original patient fee for a crown, which is why I said it was around 2014 when I did this, is $1,000. The original patient fee, nice round figures, let's make it nice and simple, $1,000. Generally, dentists who have had enough experience in years and tenure get around 40% in commission. 40% of that $1,000 means $400 in their pocket after the tax, I mean, before the tax. So from a $1,000 fee, they have retained $400 of that as payment. If there is a reduction in the fees, and I've still got, and it's available to anybody that wants it. It hasn't been updated for the last 2-3 years, and the figures that I was using were back in 2014. So I take the ADA fee list, and I get their average fees, their mean fees. I also had the, used to research the HCF fee list, Bupa, Medibank Private, NIB, all of these fee lists. And I have all their, and then I have a column there where I put the existing practice fee list that I was doing this particular project for. And I also had, because with each practice that I did this for, I added them to the list. And so I had the discounted fees in comparison to the standard practice fees. And I had about 12 practices that I was in comparison with. And the difference between was usually around a 24% reduction in fees for your preferred provider status. 24% on average over majority, like on all the main ones. So your main 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 surface fillings, crowns, exams, cleanings, extractions, root canals, bite splints, mouth guards. So on average, it was a 24% reduction in fee. Now, what does that actually mean? I mean, you know, that means instead of being paid $400 for that service that you charge $1,000 for, now you're only getting $240 for it. Oh, sorry. That means that there is a $240 reduction from the $1,000. Sorry about that. So the fee itself was $1,000. 24% reduction means you can now only charge the patient $760 for that very same service. Now, the dentist is still getting their 40%, but that 40% equates to $304 instead of $400. And so they're taking a $96 pay cut because of that reduction in fee. When I extrapolated this out a bit further and said, okay, well, let's just say that the dentist was really happy with that $400. The new fee for the service is equivalent to a 30% dentist commission rate. So instead of being paid 40%, in essence, they're being paid 30% because I've gone down from $400 to nearly $300 in payment. They are required to increase their production to match that earlier capacity by 32%. They have to increase, do an additional 32% of production to match what they were getting naturally before. And that equates to the number of hours they work in a week. The 38-hour working week now goes to 50 hours in order to achieve the same level of income that you were getting before the discounting started happening. So that's not good news. But sometimes you cop it on the chin because you've got all these new patients coming in. But that, for an employee dentist, isn't a happy picture. Let's have a look at the impact to the practice itself. Original practice fees, let's just look at this. Don't get confused with all the rest of it. Let's just have a look at this first. Let's say, for example, your current monthly turnover is $50,000. You've got the core expenses of the staff wages, provider wages, rent, consumables and lab. The percentage of turnover, these things are industry averages. And what I've seen of the practices that I've worked with and have been able to assess all their profit and loss statements. So staff wages around 12%, provider wages is the 40%, rent around 6-7% normally, consumables and lab 15%, all the other expenses, 10%. And these are the equivalent amounts that you're spending on these areas. Then you may have additional expenses such as loans, leases, cars, and advertising, adding up to 5%, $2,500 a month. All of this adds up to 89% of your turnover, which is $44,500, is then resulting in 11% profit margin, a profit every month of $5,500. So being in control of the fees you charge as a business, you are enabling yourself to balance the cost of running your business effectively. Because if this profit margin did not make you happy and was not good enough, all you then need to do is do put a shift in your practice fees, increase by 2-3%, and then you make that right. Instant business viability. However, when we're going off a reduced monthly turnover by the average of 24%, we're no longer earning $50,000 a month. Now we're earning $38,000 a month. If we wanted to maintain the same costs as this side, but with our discounted practice, that means we've got the same standard of staff. So we're paying the same wages of the staff. We're paying the provider wages for sure. I forgot that there is 52, I don't know why. I'll look into that one, that should be 40. but the amount should still be the same. Let me make sure. No, it's less, so I'll adjust that. And the adjusted one's gonna come through on the on your follow-up email. I'm confused. Pretend I said nothing. That is absolutely correct. We're looking at the financial side of it at the moment. So from the $38,000, where we used to be earning 50, we're now earning 38,000, which is 24% drop. We're still paying $6,000 in the staff wages. We're still paying out $20,000 in provider wages. We're still paying out rent of $3,500. We're still buying the same stuff, using the same lab, $7,500, etc. If we were to maintain the financial outlay of the practice, we would then start running at a loss of around $6,500 a month. Any reduction to your fees and therefore your earnings will require you to apply different business principles. The above example shows you cannot maintain the same dollar expenses, as it will result in increased percentages of turnover contributing to your outgoings. This is unsustainable. So if you went and said, oh, we're spending 19% on consumables and lab, your account would be saying, that's too much, you've got to bring it down. We're spending 16% on staff wages, that's too much, you've got to bring it down. In this final blue example, this is if you are maintaining the same costs in percentage. And so we're not maintaining this column, we're maintaining this column. Okay, so 12% on wages. We're gonna have to make this viable. So we have to maintain the percentages. That's what the accountant said. That's what will make sure we don't get into financial strife. 12% means we've got $4,560 to spend per month on wages. Who's gonna take a wage cut? Nobody. And so then you have to start adjusting to a lower level the experience, the expertise of the staff that you're employing, because you can't afford to pay $35 an hour for the receptionist. You can only afford to pay $25 an hour for a receptionist. And the only receptionists that charge $25 for their time or want $25 for their time are usually younger, less experienced, less skilled. They're getting there. They're getting to mastery, but they're not yet there yet. And so then all of a sudden you've got less experienced and less skilled staff on reception in as a nurse, as a steri nurse, etc. Maybe you can't afford to have a practice manager anymore. Rent. Are we going to move? I think we have to move. It's too expensive here. We have to relocate and move because we're not earning enough money to cover the rent that we're normally paying of $3,500 a month. We have to drop it down to $2,660 a month. Find somewhere that we can do that. And etc. That way you still achieve your 11% profit margin, but your profits actually dropped as well. It's only 4,180 now, even though it's still 11%, down from the 5,500. So any reduction to your fees and therefore your earnings will require you again to apply different business principles. The above example shows that in order to maintain the same percentage of turnover being paid towards your expenses, you have much less to cover the important elements to your practice, such as quality staff, quality dental consumables product. I'm thinking now, marketing. It's expensive to market online. Now you can't do so much marketing. This will have a direct impact on the quality of service you provide. So when you are discounting, we kind of think surface level. We don't realize that through our discounting, we are possibly going to eventually have to shift the way we do things in such a way that we as a practice are no more, we're not as appealing anymore to our niche market that we look after, that we just love looking after. We can't look after them that way anymore. And so those patients start becoming dissatisfied. The nurses there used to be great. The receptionist used to be really friendly. They've got these new people that don't know really what's going on. I might go somewhere else now. Someone's been telling me about their dentist is fantastic. I might go and give them a try. Consumables. All of a sudden you've got consumables that they're failing, the equipment's failing, all these things because you're going cheaper for all of these different elements. Maybe the lab, you're using a cheaper lab, so now you've got CRAN remakes and the problems that are around using labs of different standards as well. The rent's gone down because you're in a new location, but it's not as efficient in that space. We're cramped together. We don't have a full staff room. All of these things that you need to modify within your practice in order to accommodate these slowly incrementing discounts that you're bringing into the practice. So that's the financial impact on dentist and practice. Let's have a look at your patient base. So first of all, I want to help you understand how choosing and selecting your ideal patient can have a direct impact on your bottom line and your growth as a business, as a dental practice. So first of all, what is the value of a patient? These grids are something I used to do with many practices, and it's a worthy exercise to do yourself with your own team so you can rely on your own numbers that you've all come up with yourself. These figures here are an average. I haven't done it now for a couple of years, so a few years prior to that, it was the average. But let's have a look at recalls with bite wings every second year. So the cost of a checkup, a clean, and bite wings every second year, let's say $230 for the consult itself. We're doing it twice a year, so times two equals $460. Of our loyal client base, emergencies. Broken teeth, toothaches, how often do they come in? What are we averaging? Maybe they're going to come in once every 2 years with an emergency, and we're going to be on average charging $300. So $300 by 0.5 is $150. Keep in mind, broad averages. Don't get down to the minutia. It'll stop this process from happening. Just broad averages, okay? Advised treatment. So treatment we've actually suggested to these patients. Maybe they come in for advised treatment once a year. You know, you need that filling replaced. We need to get that crown done. And on average, when you go, okay, fillings, crowns, a split, on average, let's say it's around $350. 350 times one is $350. What about elective things such as whitening? Maybe we get a patient to do a whitening once every 5 years. So it's going to be, we're not going to get every patient doing a whitening, maybe once one every in every five patients are doing a whitening. So $1,000 by 0.2, $200. So the tally per patient is $1,160 that patient brings to your practice every year. So you look at any patient in your practice, if they're the kind of patient that you want to see, this is the kind of experience they're going to have at your practice, and that patient's going to bring in $1,160 in a year. However, I hope that you're trying to attract loyal patients that are going to be with you for longer than 1 year. Let's have a look at the average number of years loyalty we can expect by a happy patient that we've attracted to our practice. How long will they stick around with us for? A common figure that came up was 15 years. 15 times 1,160, their yearly tally, is a lifetime personal value that patient has to your practice is $17,400. It's pretty groovy. All of a sudden, you're looking at the patients a little bit differently, delivering a bit better customer service. You want them hanging around. Now, this is a patient that you've identified. This is the kind of patient we want to fill our practice with. We want to have more patients like this. They're regular in their recalls. They sure, they have emergencies, but they also agree to advise treatment and they stick with us for elective things as well. And they're loyal. So of this kind of patient, we can expect $17,400. Worthy of trying to attract that patient, yeah. How about if that patient started to refer other patients to you? What if you had a really active patient referral process in your practice? Let's not worry about so much getting the new patients from Bupa, from smile.com, from expensive marketing online. Let's just think, okay, there's a lot of patients that I love seeing at this practice and treating. What if I encourage them actively to refer friends and family to us? I wonder what that would look like. What would their lifetime personal value increase to? Let's have a look. All the same information as before. Lifetime personal value, $17,400. Over those 15 years, if we were actively asking for referrals, how many of these patients that are so happy with us, they're sticking around for 15 years, how many of them would talk us up online to with their friends and family? Over the 15 years, maybe they refer five patients. Five patients who are there, just like them. They're our ideal patients. They're bringing in $17,400 in a year. Sorry, in their lifetime with us. So they're then sticking around for 15 years. That means that it's 87,000 plus the original patient themselves and their value. All of a sudden, that one patient has a value to you of $104,000. $104,000! Oh my God! This sort of practice growth, these sort of new patients are what you want. Be mindful of when you're appealing to somebody who just wants your type of service to be treated the way you treat people. They're going to be loyal as long as you maintain your standards of employing the right kind of people, delivering the right kind of service in the right kind of way with the kind of lifetime warranty that you give on your fillings and crowns. You're not breaking and falling out because you can't afford to get dentists that you pay 40% to, now you can only get dentists that you pay 30% to. This is the kind of value that these patients will bring in, and when they refer people who are like them, those people bring in this kind of value. This is where you move from a practice that requires 30 new patients a month to survive. Now you only need 10 new patients a month because those 10 new patients are having this kind of value on your practice. Couple of stories. There was a practice that I did work for a few years ago. They did heavy advertising through NIB, and I can't remember which country they came from, but NIB had this arrangement with this particular country's migration process. And so they kind of all came in, they were covered under NIB, and then this practice used to attract this group because they all spoke the same language, same culture, all the rest of it. So all these compelling reasons to come to this dental practice. And the deal was that, you know, NIB fully rebated. We don't charge anything over the top. They advertise on radio, in local newspapers, shop fronts, everything. They got ridiculous numbers of like 80 new patients every month. It was ridiculous. I don't know how they had space for them all. Some of them did pre-book for the next 6 months. Some of them that were in that process have been contacted in 6 months, come back in for another recall. First question everyone had when they were said, it's time for your recall again, they said, what's the special offer this month? When there was no special offer, they said, oh, call me when you've got another special offer on. If the only reason you bring patients into your practice is cost, the minute the cost changes to their detriment, what's the point of them coming to you anymore? There are so many practices out there offering discounted deals. The value of the service, the value of the experience isn't what's important to them. And if that particular practice, given a few years, they would constantly need this huge influx of new patients to pay the bills because they're not building a loyal client base. Spending a lot of money on marketing, hardly achieving anything financial when they're there, and every time you need a crown, you need a filling, can you do better on the price? That is the kind of dentistry that most dentists don't enjoy. most dentists want to treat people who value the treatment outcomes that you can promise, that you can assure, that you can try to give. Try not to be complete, not promise completely, but the kind of treatment outcomes, the experience that I offer here at this practice, I want you to value that, not just because I can give you $50 off your cleaning. The other issue is that when you discount because you're a preferred provider to a particular health fund, it's the health fund that has the power. And so you may build your practice on Medibank Private and Bupa, for example. Look what happened with Bupa. They went from HPA to Bupa to owning a whole raft of dental practices, your competition. Not that I love to refer to dentists as competition with each other, but your competition in essence. And so now you're expecting all these new patients to be funneled through to you where they own the practice around the corner. That's a lot of power to put in Bupa's hands. And when you decide, I've had enough of this, I can't pay my bills, I don't like the standard of patient that's coming through who's always just concerned about fee, I'm going to get out of these health funds. The minute you get out of the health funds, you can keep the fee the same, but their rebate drops. And so their out-of-pocket increases. And sometimes, regardless of how loyal they've been, they're coming to you because it's cheap enough for them to come to you. And so when you change the financial situation, enough has changed for them quite often, so they leave. So it's an unstable patient base that you're building. Very difficult decisions for practices that want to duck out of these sort of health funds. Really difficult. And there's so much competition with them. There are many dentists on Bupa, on Medibank Private, on smile.com. So the minute you do one slight thing, they're like, oh, let's go to the other person just down the road. You want patients coming to you, having experienced the best of you and the best of your team. So if you do make that odd little mistake every now and again, they accept it as part of the relationship. They're not so fickle. And they certainly don't challenge you every time you need to charge them for the service. My next slide is something I'm going to send out to you. That's just so you can go through this little exercise with your team. I think it's a worthy thing to remember or to identify what the lifetime value is for your patients, because it helps you understand how much money to spend on trying to encourage them to refer like-minded people to you for their dental treatment. So many people, for example, they send a movie ticket to try to attract as a thank you to a patient who's referred somebody a movie ticket, which I love it. Sending anything is great. But if what they're bringing into the practice is going to mean $17,400, maybe I send them out for dinner instead at a beautiful restaurant. I want this person, because not everyone's a referrer. The ones that do refer, oh my gosh, I'm going to give you everything. You're out there. You're my salespeople. I'm going to be giving you beautiful gifts in order to say to you, thank you. Thank you for building my practice in this way, in the ideal way. So understanding what the lifetime value is of any new patient helps you understand how much money you can spend comfortably and viably in order to get them, and in order to put in place some sort of system for thanking your referring patients. The categories of patients, I'm going to go through this nice and quickly because I know the time. I'm going to be mentioning these patients. So transient, loyal, and perpetual. Transient patients have the smallest value to your practice because they really are emergency only. They rarely complete advised treatment. They don't generally come in for recalls. They're not loyal. They have a higher risk of failing their appointment time, late cancelling, and invoice issues. Your next group are your loyals. Loyals are emergencies. They complete advised treatment they complete the advised conservative treatment. So you might say, that's a really big filling, you need to have a crown, they get that done. But if you said, you can also do with a whole bunch of veneers to look better, they may not get that done. They come in for some recalls, maybe not every 6 months, but they certainly come in once every couple of years around about for their recalls. They are definitely loyal. If they had an emergency, they're coming to you. They're not doing a ring around, whereas the transients will. They have a far lower risk of FTA, late cancellations and invoice issues. And then you've got your perpetual patients. Your perpetuals are, they come to you for emergencies, only you, nobody else. They complete all the treatment that you advise. If you think I need it, I'm doing it. They come in every 6 to 12 months for recalls. It's just part of their habit of life. They are definitely loyal and, again, very low risk of FTA, late cancellation and invoice issues. Which of these three patients do you want to fill your patient base with? Do you want to fill it with transients? No. Do you want to fill it with loyals? Yeah. And do you want to fill it with perpetuals? Absolutely. So when you are marketing yourself in all the very ways that you are communicating with patients, you are attracting a certain type. So who are you attracting? You attract people with the way your website appears and the messages on your website. Free, free, free discount. You're getting a whole bunch of transients. If the website's all about value, high quality customer service, long-standing treatment plans, like treatments that last for a long, long time, then all of a sudden you're attracting more loyal and perpetual patients. Your social media pages, it's all putting messages out there. Signage, local advertising, word of mouth, what other patients, your existing patients are saying about you. You should go to My Dentist, it's half price. You should go to My Dentist because you will never be treated better anywhere else. Reputation, the reputation that you forge within your community. Google reviews are a big part of the messages that people get about who you are, what you do. And then there's the internal messages. Once a patient becomes a patient, it's the level of customer service, the systems that you've got, the physical environment, the expertise of the staff, the services you provide. All of these are giving messages to your patient base, the standard of care, the communications, how you do recalls, incomplete treatment follow-up, TLC calls. The systems is a big one, for example. If you have a growing number of patients that are failing to attend, late cancelling, you're going to be putting in place systems to counter this problem, to address this problem. Those very systems will alienate your loyal and perpetuals that don't present that issue to you. So the systems that you have to put in place to cater for your transient patient base, forcing your loyal and perpetuals out the door. It's no longer nice going there anymore. Something's changed. So think about who you're attracting. Think about all your external messages and all of your internal messages. Change them all to be appealing to your ideal patient base. That's what will then grow. So who makes up your patient base? You want them all to... Majority of your patients, 80% of your patient base, you want them to be loyals and perpetuals. Definitely cater for the transients. Absolutely. People have toothaches. They need to be seen. Definitely cater to them. Just be very wary of the systems that you put in place that you're not alienating your existing client base that you love. This is just a little thing that you can do in order to kind of get into the mind space, the thinking, the mindset of your ideal patient. You could have a female and a male version of your patient avatar. So generally, if you can think of an ideal patient who's a male and an ideal one who's a female as a team, write down what's their age, their gender, ethnicity, marital status, all the rest, goals, values. Again, we're doing averages, but if you pick one person, write their information in there. All of a sudden, your marketing messages, the terminology that you use, the content that you use in your website and your marketing will change because now you're honing in right there on your ideal avatar patient. So cater your practice to your ideal patient. You become more focused with your marketing. You have increased patient referrals because what you're delivering is awesome and you're asking for these referrals. You have a more stable patient base. They won't leave you just because of price. Seeing patients that you enjoy seeing. Appropriate systems to keep your ideal patients happy. Thoughtful recruitment. You are recruiting people who not only want to be on this path of constant never-ending improvement, but they love seeing your kind of avatar patient just as much as you love it. They know exactly how to treat them. We're all in this together, this tribe together. Increase turnover, as long as you're not doing the discounting. So increase turnover because you are no longer doing cheap checkups, cheap this, cheap that. People are accepting your treatment plans. So it's a better range of services you're able to provide. ability to fund improvements to service. That's so amazing. Like, just say you thought, okay, we're going to start doing implants here. What are the costs involved in getting this up and running? Damn it, we can't, because we don't have control over our whole fee list. So we can't do it. I have to say, when I owned my practice for 10 years, I couldn't have imagined there'd be a situation ever where I would have willingly handed over the control of what I could charge to an external entity whose agenda would be to reduce it down. Never. I lose control over the type of people I can employ. I lose control of how much I can spend on marketing, how well I can treat my ideal patient base. I could never have imagined a situation where I would do that. Increased value of practice when it's time to sell. A practice that has this strong patient base of loyal and perpetual patients that have been around for ages, they're very loyal, they've been there for their 15 years, they're referring. Your strongest source of new patients is referrals, get out of town. And you're not restricted by any fee list here. Your practice will be higher in value when it comes time to sell than if you were going down the other path. Thank you for hanging around for the extra bit. I'm not going to go through the daily focus. You'll find that what that is tomorrow morning when it gets emailed out to you, but I won't take up any more of your time. Thanks for hanging around for the whole length. If you have, no, yeah, it's been quite a few that have dropped off, so I do apologize. If you have any questions around this, please let me know. I'll attach all the bits and pieces to the lesson that I will then email out to you within the next hour. I wish you all a beautiful evening, and if you, as I say, if I can help in any way, please let me know, especially with topics coming up that you'd like me to address. Please let me know. Have a beautiful evening. Thanks. See you later.